This is an ABC podcast.
I don't know about you, but when I'm struggling with things, feeling really vulnerable or like a bit of a failure, the last thing I want to do is tell the world about it. But that's exactly what Kylie Soanes did a few years ago. Her PhD in ecology was no guarantee of getting ongoing work or even scoring a decent string of casual gigs. Kylie wrote about her struggles with the constant job rejections, her insecurity and feelings of failure. Not in a diary or in a chat group with her mates, she went the full publish or perish and posted it online for the whole world to read. What happened? Here's Kylie with the story back in 2017.
I did something kind of risky recently. I wrote a blog post about my inability to handle the academic job market. And then I published it and I asked the world to read it. Peers, strangers, potential future employers, well, probably not anymore. Everybody. Now, of course, most of the world did not read it. I suppose they were busy. But still many did, and the response surprised me. See, I figured I was in the minority, that my story of being an early career scientist who struggles to land a full-time job, spends months unemployed or scrounging for casual contracts, and was left racked with self-doubt was unique. I never for a second imagined that it would resonate so strongly with so many others. Far from the exception, this story seems much closer to the rule for early career researchers, both in Australia and abroad. Now, I'm not saying that everyone else admitted to hiding away in a pillow fort to mope and drink wine in the aftermath of their seventh rejected job application. But far and away, the most common response was, "Oh my God, I'm so glad that this isn't just me." It's no secret that the academic job market can be tough. You can't go a day without reading yet another opinion piece about there being too many PhDs and not enough funding. These usually link to pieces on why you should consider career paths outside of academia, or an academia sucks and that's why I left story. If you're not careful, you can spend a whole day reading about why choosing a career in academic research is just a terrible, terrible idea. So when I bounced out of the graduation ceremony with my newly minted PhD and floppy hat and those robes that made me feel like an extra in a Harry Potter flick, I thought I knew what I was in for. I expected it to be competitive. I expected a series of 12-month contracts with very little job security, and I expected to have to work really, really hard. What I didn't expect was how hard it would be just to get the opportunity to work hard, or how much of this work would be done for free. Things started out pretty great. I'd lined up my first postdoc, a 12-month contract, and my supervisor and I had plans to extend the work and keep building. But when an unforeseen funding shortage saw my contract extension evaporate, I re-entered the job-seeking fray. And it was slim pickings. Now, that's not true, actually. There seemed to be lots of positions and grants. I just couldn't get any of them. I only managed to get one interview, which I was outgunned for. And so I found myself unemployed. Now, it's worth pointing out that just because your contract ends doesn't mean your commitments do. My students still needed feedback. I still had to travel to Canada for a workshop that I'd co-organised months prior. And I'd agreed to speak at three different events and had papers to resubmit. And all this was due after my contract ended. Also, I didn't want to leave academia, not just yet. I know other career paths for scientists exist, but at this point, I'd trained specifically for this one. So I did whatever I could to stay. And this meant floating around the university like a stray, picking up bits and pieces of casual work. Some data entry here, a guest lecture there, marking for subjects, things like that. I stitched together about 8 casual contracts in a 12-month period to make myself a Frankenstein postdoc. It was ugly, but it kept me in the loop and it got me paid. Of course, it still doesn't amount to full-time work, and in my free time, I was able to keep my own research agenda ticking along. Okay, so now I hear you thinking, well, that's all very sad and all, but maybe she's just not very good. Firstly, ouch. And secondly, the thought had also crossed my mind. I'd never heard of anyone else having to do this, so I felt like a massive failure. And in truth, I'm not so bad. I get published and cited. I've won grants and awards. Though I also once thought I'd discovered this fantastic new species of cockatoo, which just turned out to be a raven with a donut in its mouth. So, you know, I'm imperfect. But I'm also not alone. In the conversations I've had since I shared my story, it's become clear that my experience is in no way unique. Others that are much smarter and more successful than myself had either gone through or were currently going through this exact same process, and they all felt just as awful about themselves. So how are early career scientists all feeling so alone in what's such a shared experience? It might be because when we look around, it seems that all we see are people either sailing straight into amazing fellowships or quitting. So it feels like those are the paths. You either succeed or you leave. Those stories of struggle on the way to success often seem to be missing. And this creates a mismatch between the perceived path of a successful researcher and the much messier reality. The old Frankenstein postdoc doesn't come up much when people regale us with tales of their academic journey. So when we end up on short contracts and uncertain positions, or even unemployed, we think that maybe we've done something wrong. I've heard brilliant young scientists describe themselves as inadequate, useless, and even failures. And this doesn't seem right to me. Now, in hindsight, my path probably looked pretty smooth to most casual observers. My Twitter and Facebook feeds showed me off at a conference in Brazil, speaking at a fancy seminar, or decorating a new office. It didn't show me bursting into tears on the train, or cancelling my Easter holiday plans to write another job application, or starting a nemesis list of all the people who got the jobs I applied for. Admittedly, I was not my best self. And seasoned academics might be sitting back thinking, oh, well, she doesn't even realise the half of how tough it gets. And they'd probably be right, but that's kind of my point. I think we need a little bit more openness about the realities of the early years of a research career. Tales of Frankenstein postdocs, rejections and hardships. I mean, these might help people persevere when they otherwise wouldn't. And ultimately, that's what success in science or anything else comes down to. It's perseverance. It's really hard to push on when you feel like your experience is abnormal. Now, the move to shed light on rejection in academic research has been growing of late. Some are publishing shadow CVs that show not just the list of their accomplishments, but also all the rejections and failed attempts along the way. And an American researcher recently published their journey to a permanent position, totaling 112 applications and 17 interviews over a 2-year period. Now, these kinds of stories are really great steps along the way to removing this culture of invisible failure. Another benefit of being more open is that it lets people make informed decisions about their future. For example, maybe, for perfectly valid life reasons, you can't survive on a series of casual contracts with intermittent unemployment. Or maybe, for equally valid reasons, a life of academic limbo and constant job seeking doesn't sound appealing. Being able to make this decision, to plan to take your research skills along a different career path, is far and away better than having the motivation slowly squeezed out of you until you leave science entirely, feeling like you've failed. And that's not doing anybody any good. I will point out that there are unicorns among us, magical beings who've had a smooth career path to success, and I bear them no ill will, unless they have made it onto the aforementioned nemesis list. But it's important to realise that they're the exception to the rule. For most of us, the academic career path is only intermittently magical and littered with trolls. And look, I know that changing expectations is not a solution to the job shortage or any other systemic issues that we have. But I can't do much to change federal funding in science, university hiring practices, or the job market. What I can do is help give people an honest idea of what to expect, and hopefully make them feel that little bit better about their own skills and experience. So for me, the hang in there strategy worked. By the end of my year of the Frankenstein postdoc, I'd landed a full-time position that I thoroughly enjoy. But I'm also keenly aware that in another year or two, I might need to do all of this again. At least now, I feel much more equipped to deal with that. So if you're an early career scientist and you're feeling less than stellar about your abilities, know this. These aren't bumps in the road that you've hit because you've done something wrong or you're not good enough. Sometimes this just is the road. Keep doing what you're doing, and don't let this part make you feel like you're not cut out for science.
I'm not sure how much has changed for other young PhDs since we recorded Kylie's story, but 3 years on, she's on a bit of a roll. After back-to-back contracts at Melbourne Uni, she's about to take up an 18-month fellowship there. That's pretty much postdoc gold. In amongst all that hustling, she's slipped in a little career interruption as well. That's academic speak for having a baby. And the toddler's given her some fresh material for Life on the Verge, her blog about species living on the edge and life as an early career researcher. It's brilliant and hilarious. Check it out. I'm Bernie Hobbs. Catch you next week for our final Occam's Razor of 2020. It's a ripper.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.